Okay, I'd like to call. Are you ready?
Yes,
okay.
Sir.
I'm calling a special board special meeting for 20th of February 2013. Can I get a roll call?
President Tetro?
Here.
Vice President Simon?
Here.
Director Graves? Not here. Director Simon? Director Steele?
Here.
Did I?
Yes.
Sorry.
Okay, thank you. Public comment. There's nobody here for public comment, so open public comment. Close public comment. Thank you. Okay. Open session. I'll turn that over to Mr. Dan.
Thank you, Mr. President, board members. The board is now adjourning into closed session regarding action item D1. Thank you, sir.
Great, Dennis.
Okay, are we on?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, we're back. So, legal, close to that.
Thank you, Mr. President, board members. The board is reconvened from closed session regarding item D-1. All of the board members were present with the exception of Director Peace, who was absent tonight. Reportable action is as follows. By unanimous vote of the board members present, the law firm of New Miller and Beardsley has been authorized to provide the legal defense in this action. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Okay, with that, we're going to adjourn until a 7 o'clock meeting.
Oh, one other thing, if we could go back on record.
We're back on record.
Just for the record, Director Graves arrived shortly after we convened in the closed session. Thank you.
I was going to say that, but then you should
wait. Yeah, they
opened. Now he's on the environment.
7 o'clock, you're wrong.
7 o'clock.
Drinking your Kool-Aid.
I know that.
Okay, I'd like to open this 7 o'clock meeting for the town of Discovery Bay. Can we get a roll call, please?
President Tetro?
Here.
Vice President Simon?
Here.
Director Graves?
Here.
Director Pease? Director Steele?
Here.
Is your mic still on the board?
I don't know. If you'll all join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Hey, Wiz.
All right, I'd like to now open the meeting to public comment. Anybody in the board and the audience can comment on anything that's not on the agenda. You'll have 3 minutes to make your comments. If you want to comment, come up to the podium. Anybody have any public comment? Going once, twice? Okay, we will close public comment and move on. Okay, any presentations?
Not this evening.
Okay. And under presidents and directors' comments, I just have a quick comment that Director Simon and myself and Mr. Howard attended the Veolia safety dinner last night, which was a very nice affair, and they've had 4 years without any safety violations, and that's a really good thing to have. And we thank you for having us there.
It was our pleasure.
It's excellent.
And
I'll echo what you just said.
All right. Anything down here, Kevin? You got anything?
No, I'm good.
You good?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We're gone to the consent calendar.
I'll make a motion. We approve the consent calendar.
All right.
I'll second
it. Okay. Any public comment on the consent calendar? Seeing none. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Thank you. We'll now start with new business actions in item F with number one, staff. I'm hanging.
This is, thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. Staff is bringing to you this evening our mid-year budget summary and review of our mid-year and our capital improvement program for FY 2012-2013. This would have gotten to you a little bit earlier in the year. We would have preferred it about a month ago, but due to scheduling conflicts, and we had to reschedule that one board meeting, and it caused a delay in this. So with that said, Dina is here this evening, and she can answer any questions that anybody may have. but we are on track for our operating budget. It's going to be a tight year this year. We have a number of items that are purchased early in the year and acquired earlier in the year, so the numbers are skewed a little bit more on the front end than on the back end. We do not, as you know, we do not budget with a large surplus in mind. We try to cut it as close to the bone as we can. I'd rather have us be careful and watchful with our expenditures than go over in certain areas. We do have two areas, it says three, but there's two areas that I want to bring to your attention where this year we did have higher than normal expenses, and we are going to continue this trend through the remainder of the fiscal year. The first is the information systems efforts that we've been doing this past 6 months, six, 7 months. As you all know, we were operating with a phone system that was no better, in fact, in worst cases, in some cases worse than a residential phone system. When you have a staff of 11 people working on three phone lines and people trying to call in and trying to call out, it just became overburdened. And so we have recently completed, as you all know, that upgrade to a voice over internet protocol phone system. The monthly costs are about the same, a little bit more than we were paying with AT&T. One of the main reasons why the cost of this had on the phone system had jumped up so significantly was due to the fact that the backbone of the system to bring the DSL lines onto the site did not exist. We had to run them in, we had to build the pipeline and bring it in place. And that was an unexpected expense that we thought at the time when we were budgeting this that was in place, and it was not. Also, we've gone through a major computer upgrade. Part of it took place this past weekend. As you are aware, migrating from our C drives and our local server to a Microsoft Exchange server, which now allows staff as well as the board seamless abilities to interact with all their devices in this world of electronics and connectivity, but it also allows us to get into a VPN, a virtual private network as well. And so we are anticipating that our budget on these items will be approximately 100% more than we had anticipated. We're looking at about $30,000 instead of $16,000. We're still going to keep an eye on it. And so that is probably the biggest item that we missed on this year. There were a number of reasons for it, unfortunately, that weren't picked up earlier in the year as we were preparing the budget. The second item isn't really as big of a situation as it initially as it might look. The preventive and corrective fund that we have with Veolia, it's contractually set at $107,000, and we budget it at $107,000. The staff report references that we are trending to spend approximately $160,000. That number has since jumped up, and it is now trending. We've already spent a little over $200,000, so we're going to be exceeding that budget. However, there's a reason for that in the fact that previously, in prior years, the town, we would purchase equipment ourselves, some of the pumps and motors and that sort of thing. And so what's happened in the last 6 months is Veolia is able to get some better pricing, and they're able to be able to acquire the equipment a little bit more seamlessly than we are at this point in time. And so they've been buying it, and we have a fund for that that's already an established fund. So that account is very, very low. It's way under budget. It's at $23,000 of a $100,000 budget. But the other reason for that, for the increase in that area, is just the fact of the sheer magnitude that we're getting a lot of work done. And as items come up for repair, and as Veolia and the maintenance repair crews come across things, they're not deferring them, they're going ahead and repairing them. So while it may be more expensive this year, we're hopefully looking at future years of having the benefit of that as we move forward. With respect to our personnel costs for the year, we are trending right now at 46%, so that's pretty close. We might end up, we have had some temporary staffing in that more than likely is skewing that number. But overall, throughout the course of the first 6 months of the year, it's trending about right. Overall budget, the operating budget from the operating budget standpoint is 55% spent with 45% remaining. Dina, is that 45% through June 30, or is that through the date of the printout when you when you pulled up the numbers?
The 45% would be remaining through June.
Through December 31?
That's as of December 31.
Yeah, okay. Okay, thank you. So those are really the items on the operating. There's a number of things that are a little bit higher and a little bit lower, but they're within what I would refer to as reasonably expected variances. There aren't too many that really jump out at us and say that there's something that we need to keep an eye on, other than those two, the IT issues as well as the preventive and corrective fund.
Rick, what's happened with our insurance? I'm looking at we're 99% we've spent for the insurance. We forecast 67,000 or 66.2.
That's one of those items that are billed at the very beginning of the fiscal year. We pay it all up front.
Okay.
It all gets paid up at the very beginning of the year.
Okay.
That should be the number we have at the end of the year.
Okay. That's good news.
I'm going to go ahead and move on to the last.
So just go for a second, will you, Rick? Tell me, preventive and corrective is such a general term. That is it. Preventive and corrective
maintenance.
It's the PNM that Veolia performs for us throughout the course of the year. It's not part of their contract for services.
Okay.
It is, they are funds that are put aside to fix items if a pump breaks or if there needs to be repairs on certain things.
I'm sorry.
A lot of it's scheduled, a lot of it's PM, preventive maintenance, a lot of it's predictive maintenance. If you look under line item 7406 towards the top of the second page, I'm sorry, 7405, you'll see that the budget is $100,000 and we've spent $23,000. So a lot of that preventive maintenance fund would have come out of that, and by the end of the year, we're going to go back and correct and move some of those costs out so it will be more accurate as we move forward.
Okay. Good.
I also have the CIP.
Okay.
And Gregory Harris is here, and he can weigh in on some of these as well. It's on the last couple pages.
Mm-hmm.
The CIP has really been it's really on a fast track. We've got a lot of projects underway. Almost every single project that the board authorized is underway in one shape, one form or another. We purchased the electronic message board. We bought the boom lift, purchased a vehicle. We are in the process of finishing the design to move the fiber optics to plant one, from plant one to plant two. Well 7, as you know, is underway finally. Well 1B equipment upgrade, that was recently approved by the board, and that's moving forward. The influent pump station modifications, the reactivation of a pump station W and the emergency storage facilities are on your agenda tonight to approve contracts there. And those projects, Greg, correct me if I'm wrong, those are 90% design complete?
Yeah.
The splitter ditch, the splitter box, the aux ditch, the fire fire, the big project, that is approximately 50% design complete?
Not that far, no.
Okay.
We're working on it.
The manholes have been rehabbed, some of the manholes have been raised, the road crossing ramps have been purchased. The UV bank, which was part of the finance projects, that has been purchased and installed. The board authorized that a few months back. That project actually came in at about $100,000 under the preliminary estimate, due to the fact that we were originally going to contract that out, the installation of that, and Veolia came to us and said, we can do that, we can do it for a lot cheaper, and they did, and they saved us about $100,000 to do it. So, moving down the list towards the bottom, the Infrastructure Replacement Fund, the board, the last meeting, approved the funding from the Water Infrastructure Replacement Fund for the water line main replacement on Discovery Bay Boulevard at the north end of DB Boulevard. And we've also hit the facilities and vehicle replacement fund, and that's what we used the funding for to replace the handicap access ramp or our ramp outside the building. So that is our CIP for the year, and it continues to move forward. And as you know, the one project I left off is the project that's almost complete, which is the solar dryer, the belt press project. Mm-hmm. The first phase of that is more than the first phase. About the first three phases are complete, and all we're waiting for now is the additional belt press, as well as the buildings to come on site for final construction.
And
we
water
should be
room.
Completed with those. And the water line.
Yeah, you're not really running without that water.
Correct. So if you have any questions on the budget, like I said, Dean and I, and if you have any questions about the CIP, Virgil and Gregory are here to address any of those questions you might have as well.
Any questions from the board?
Okay. The only question I did have, and I asked for this at the last meeting of the meeting before, you're going to give us a breakdown of the CIP of where we are in each one of our projects.
We're going over this on Saturday also.
Aren't we going to cover this on Saturday? Well, this is our CIP review here. Were you looking for something different, Rick?
Well, yes and no, but we can talk about it on Saturday.
Okay.
How about the audience? Any comments from the audience? Okay. And there's no action required on this, so we will move on. Item number two, Town Discovery Bay draft vehicle use policy. Again, Ms. Steph.
Thank you again, Mr. President, members of the board. I'm bringing to you a draft of a policy that we don't have in place and we should have in place. It is a vehicle use policy that would provide a set of rules and regulations and responsibilities and actions as your staff moves around town in their company owned and their personal owned vehicles, if they happen to be doing business on district business using their personal vehicle. There are a number of items. The draft of this draft policy came from an organization called CJPIA, which stands for the California Joint Powers Insurance Authority. It's a model ordinance that they use for their member agencies. CJPIA is very similar to SDRMA, who's our insurance provider. I have reviewed this with SDRMA. They are very happy with it. In fact, indicated that they may even use it for themselves. And legal has also reviewed it. And so for the insurance requirements. This policy addresses pretty much anything that can or could happen during the course of driving a district vehicle on district business or a personal vehicle on district business, from all the way from using mobile devices to alcohol in the vehicle to rules of the road, making sure that we pull their their DMV pull notices. We do those annually already as a matter of course. Making sure that if they have too many points on their record, that there's retributions and there can be items that can take place all the way up to and including termination, depending on the severity of them. What I'm looking for this evening is really just some feedback. I'm not looking to finalize it tonight. I want to make sure that before, this is your policy, it's not my policy. So I want to make sure that you're comfortable with it as we move forward, and I believe we need it. We do have a reimbursement policy in place, but it doesn't really cover those items that are outside of just the typical vehicle mileage reimbursement. This covers pretty much the use from A to Z. So if you have any questions.
I have no questions. Any questions from the board?
I do.
Oh.
Item 5, section A, subsection 1, item B. I don't know if I said that right.
You did.
Page 2 of 11.
It runs from 2 of 11 onto 3 of 11.
Yes.
Okay. It's my opinion that the vehicles that belong to the district should not be used for personal use outside the district. You've drawn an arbitrary 15-mile radius from the town of Discovery Bay to allow people to commute with the vehicle, and that encompasses one of our managers currently, but you know, we could, things could change. We could have a manager from Stockton, which is 3 miles further, and I think that you're getting into a situation where we're accommodating, instead of making the policy, we're accommodating existing conditions, and I just don't believe that we should be paying anybody's commute time. That if you live in the district and you're a manager, there's no problem keeping that vehicle within the district. But if you choose to live outside the district, then we should not be providing commute vehicles for our employees. And I'm opposed to allowing the vehicles to be used for commute outside the district.
You want me to respond?
If you like.
What I did was, in I didn't want to take a current situation and manipulate the policy to fit that. What I did was I took what I thought to be a reasonable approach was I went online, I went to Google Maps, and I measured the distance from our boundary here to Oakley, and then to the outskirts of Oakley, and then it was about 15 miles, and then I took that 15-mile radius, and that's where the 15-mile radius came from. It would include the communities of Byron, Brentwood, Oakley, Mountain House, and maybe a portion of Antioch. But I'm not sure if it would hit Antioch. Yeah. So that was the rationale in coming up with that. But that's certainly it is most certainly the board's prerogative.
The only exception to what Kevin's talking about, if you had a manager who's on call 24 hours a day in an emergency, like Virgil used to be when he was here with somebody.
Still is.
I mean, you know what I'm talking about. If you have somebody who's actually on call to this town 24 hours a day, is the only exception I could see. I mean, if they had use for a truck or use for a company vehicle, rather than coming in an emergency, having to come to a yard, getting a vehicle, coming back out again, that I could possibly see. But if it's an employee who is not, I agree with Kevin, there's no reason for them to be driving a car home. I just don't see putting miles on one of our company vehicles and us paying the gas for their commute.
It's more of a liability issue in my viewpoint.
We have on occasion allowed a non-manager to take a vehicle home. However, the person actually lives in Discovery Bay. It's one of our water employees. And when Virgil is out of town and cannot respond in the middle of the night, we allow him to take it home so he can respond a lot quicker. But that's the only exception that we've had in that situation.
I think that's a reasonable.
Yeah, that's reasonable. Yeah.
And with this situation, the other situation with the manager, the only thing I would like to throw out there is the fact that there are multiple occasions, where this manager attends meetings in the morning that might not necessarily be here in town, or she attends a function, or she has to run to Home Depot or run to a hardware or run and pick something up, and to come here and run all the way back just doesn't always seem to make the most sense. But again, it's your discretion.
I would suggest that we keep it to emergency 24-hour on-call staff, and that I have no problem keeping within the district boundaries, just because there may be an incident that we need, like right now, and I don't know where the truck's at, and so you know, maybe we need it to haul tools or sandbags. I don't know what the situation might be, but I would just say, on that emergency basis, I think it's important. I think that for these one occasional things, I think that's kind of your call, but from a liability standpoint, I'd like to see the vehicle in town and available for service, as needed.
Again, I'm looking for feedback, and we can have further discussions on this as we move forward.
So you want to just leave this alone for now and come back to it? That's what you're saying.
You know, I can take input.
Mm-hmm.
from you offline.
Yeah.
I believe just input regarding this.
Yeah.
And bring it back to you. Mm-hmm. That these were some of the suggestions that came up from different members of the board.
Well, I think we know what just came up.
Well, I know, but there may be others. You, this is the first time you're really getting a chance to look at it. And there's right. It's 11 pages of policy, and so I want to be able to at least present it and provide it to you this evening and let you know that I'm looking forward to bringing it back to you at a future date. Okay.
And for clarification, Rick, as I have read through this thing, part of it was kind of a part of this was kind of a boilerplate that you used from. Because I look at rental field vehicles and that type of thing, and those are so atypical for anything we would have to have that it, I don't know if it has ever applied.
If you travel, if I were to travel on an airplane and have to rent a car.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I'm thinking the way I use a rental.
Right.
Sorry. Okay. I'm sorry. I get
it. So I think we'll just, I guess what we're going to do is just wait a while and other input you have back to this general manager and. We'll visit at a later time.
And some feedback on it.
And anything from the audience? Any audience comments on this? Okay, there's no audience comments, so we're going to move on.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Item 3, which is Resolution 2013-05, authorizing state and federal criminal history information. That's again the staff.
Thank you again. Now that we are the proud owners of the Discovery Bay Community Center, and we have staff there that work with, that potentially in the future would be working with children and minors, the public resources code requires, or actually prohibits us from hiring a person or even a volunteer at specified parks and recreational facilities without having a criminal DOJ background check. So this would make us compliant with that law, and it's actually good insurance for us, so we know exactly who it is we're hiring, and I think
it's a good policy. This is for a public agency.
Yeah. And each background check is $81.
That's fine. Worth it.
It's through the California Department of Justice.
Yeah, fine. My kind of it's good.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Any other more comment?
Is this will this be monitored so that any time a status changes, or we have a policy that how often that you're going to renew this these monitoring, or is this a one time thing?
You usually do it one time.
It's a pre-employment DOJ check.
All right. Well, I had background in this business, and my understanding is that the cost could be down less than $30 a person, and that you could have online monitoring so that every on a regular basis, you would go through and for another for update, just make sure you know where everybody stands, and you may want to consider more than just once or pre-employment screening.
The company is through Live Scan Services, and
we'll look into it through the California
Department of Justice, so I would guess that they
would. I went for a concept because of kids. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're going to bring this back then. Is that what I'm hearing?
Do you want action on this?
Yes.
Yeah, let's get an action.
I would move that we approve and adopt Resolution 2013-05, authorizing access to state and federal criminal history.
Oh, before I get a second, any audience participation? Okay.
And I'll second it.
Well, I got a second. Thank you. Any other comments? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye. No, nay.
Okay. That's 3 yes, 1 no. Okay. Moving on to item 4. Again, that's staff.
Okay, thank you very much. The next item on the agenda this evening is a contract with Greenplay LLC for professional consulting services related to the future planning and operational functions of the Discovery Bay Community Center. You can almost look at this as similar to an operational master plan for the community center. The contract amounts were $10,800. Greenplay is a nationally recognized firm. They're based out of Colorado. We've actually used them for some preliminary work on this project, and we're very happy with their work product, their suggestions, and their guidance. This is more, much more robust in that they will assist us, as well as the Community Center Committee, as we move forward developing the future planning programming for the community center. So what we're looking for tonight is the, and this is budgeted as part of the interim budget that the board approved back on February the 6th.
Any comments from the board?
Rick, do you think it would be, when do you see this coming into play with regards to, when do you see this coming into play with regards to the schedule as was brought forward at the last meeting? In other words,
we could use our services now.
We don't know, we've only approved a very temporary budget, not knowing where we'll be in 3 months from now with regards to self-sustainment of the facility. And so if we get involved with them giving us advice as it currently stands, that may not be where it is 3 months from now, and it may be, but I'm just saying, have you taken into consideration when you would bring them in to make these recommendations, and would it be based on the, its current status or where it's going to be 3 months from now?
If you move to page 68 on your agenda packet there, and just scroll down, 68 of 112.
In their proposal?
It's in their proposal. It's their scope, under their scope of services. And I'm sorry, it wasn't bookmarked a little bit better than it.
Really?
Yeah.
68, huh? Okay.
Yeah, I know.
I'm looking at a checkerboard.
Well, you'll get there.
The bottom right there.
112. Oh, okay. Here we go. Back to 68. 125.
All right.
90.
Summary of current scope.
86. Okay, I'm getting close.
Me too.
71, 9, 69, 68. I'm there.
The second bullet there, prepare for and conduct an on-site visit and meetings with staff, instructors, users, the current manager, which is us, as well. And I would schedule this for a meeting for a day that the Community Center Committee meets, so they can also be part of the process as well. And then you go down to the fifth bullet where it begins, provide a conversion plan, including a draft program and staffing plan, job descriptions, and operational conceptual costs outlined for year one of operations. And then as part of that, they would assist us in putting together a future program. They've done this before, it's what they do, and we would utilize their services to assist us in those efforts.
You know, I kind of like the idea of waiting for the 4 month period and see how we do, and then award this size of a contract myself.
Or let's, and that wasn't necessarily, I was just asking a question. Mm-hmm. I wasn't necessarily making that, although you have, and that's fine.
I assume that you guys have already approved.
Really, at what point, well, it was in the budget. But at what point do you plan to bring it? Is it like in the next 30 days, in the next 10 days, in the next 60 days?
To bring this back?
To bring play into play.
Almost immediately. Get them in, get them working with the Community Center Committee to get in. They're going to be assisting us as we help support the Community Center Committee with their decision-making process as to the future and what's going to happen after the first 120 days. And they can also, they're also very good at helping with current facility uses as well.
Yes.
So the idea is that one of the things they can help us do is help us create that model for the next phase. Mm-hmm. As far as a staffing, operations, programming, and getting those costs. So that when we get to the, you know, close to the end of this interim period here, we can give you, come back and give a very good consolidated analysis of what it's going to take to push through the next fiscal year. And you know, I know we're going into May budget planning, and I think we need their skills to help craft that and be thorough, so we don't miss anything or set the expectation incorrectly.
And Director Steele did meet with them when they were out and, and was able to interact with them as well.
They've got a model on a template. That's what they've got.
Do you need direction on this? But it's already been approved, I thought, in the budget.
We need a motion.
It's been approved in the budget, but it hasn't been
approved.
It hasn't been approved because it exceeds my spending authority.
So, let me see if there's any comments from the audience on this. Okay. Is there a motion to be had here?
Yeah, I'll make a motion that we approve the contract with Green Play in the amount of $10,800 for professional consulting services.
To begin immediately, Kevin?
To begin within whatever the schedule that that the general manager has in plan, seeing that they will be well aware of the transition that may or may not occur, and I think that we can have, use their help with that as well, giving us advice whether we're going the right direction or not.
And whatever information they provide us, even if it's premature today, will be beneficial tomorrow.
I thought about that after I asked the question. Thank you, Rick.
All right, that's it.
Okay. I'll second the motion.
All right, we've got a motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, good. Okay, we're going to go to item five, Influent Pump Station W. Again, staff?
This is one of those, this is one of those projects that was included in the current, in the current CIP. It was one of the projects that was identified for long-term financing. It is the our emergency storage facilities. Mm-hmm. As you recall, going through the master plan process, it was identified in the wastewater master plan that emergency storage facilities are severely lacking, and that if we did have a situation that required us to have to store sludge, if you will, that we would not be able to do so for an extended period of time, for even less than a day. This provides us a little bit of relief. The pond is already existing. It was deactivated or decommissioned a number of years ago, along with Pump Station W, and the effluent pump station needs to be renovated as well. What we're doing, what we're recommending tonight, is for the board action to authorize the purchase of the pumps and the valves and the SCADA equipment from a variety of different firms that are listed in there. Red Valve Company, Veolia, and Specialty, and Weir Specialty Pumps. These items are proprietary in nature in most cases, and while other pumps do exist out there in the market, we use the pumps that this company uses for standardization, and we highly recommend maintaining that continuity. The budget for this project is $1,320,000. This is just a part of it, and there will be more of this project coming as we go to bid and award the construction project. But this allows us, as you know, the lead time on many of these pieces of equipment is 6 to 9 months, and this allows us the ability to go ahead and pre-order some of those pieces of equipment, avoid the vendor markup, the contractor markup, and have them on site when they're ready, when the contractor comes on board and they're ready to begin construction. And Gray, I don't know if you have any other additions to that, but if you want to add anything, or if you have any other clarifying parts to that.
I can answer any
questions. That's why he's here, is I asked him to come up with
this. Any questions
from
the board?
I'm
all for this.
The item, I'm all for it too. The items that we're looking at do not exceed the budgeted amount.
No, not yet. we're still way within the budget. In talking to Gregory Harris, our district engineer, on this the other day, we do have a little concern that we might hit the budget and exceed it a little bit on this one. We've seen significant savings in some of the other ones, and this one may be a little bit over. Is that about right, Gregory?
Yeah, we got a little surprised. We had to upgrade the PG&E service. A couple other things we didn't anticipate that are adding some cost to the project. So in terms of the budget of 1.3 total, Mm-hmm. For this project, I think we will be over probably a couple $100,000.
Did we hear from PG&E?
We have.
Oh, we have.
We have a contract now. We just got that resolved. Mm-hmm. But there's some added costs on this first project. We saw savings, as I said, on the UV, and we think we'll see savings on some of the others. So we think on a whole, we're still okay. But we do anticipate exceeding the $1.3 million. Okay. When the next item will come to you will be the contract.
How about here, if you're going to continue? We're trying to record this. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
No, it's all right.
Is it on?
Okay.
Yeah. Gregory Harris, Herbert Engineering. As Rick stated, we've had a few things that have driven the cost up that weren't anticipated when we started this project. We think the best way to save the money, as we said, is to purchase the equipment. Veolia is saving us about $50,000 by providing the skating equipment. The pumps are, we got a discount on the purchase of the pumps because we're buying the pumps. Red Valve held the cost to last year, so we didn't get a cost increase on those. And then, of course, we're saving the contractor's markup on that equipment as well. Yeah. And the real thing is the pumps are 9 months to get the pumps here to install. So. But in general, the budget probably will exceed the $1.3 million. The next item before you will be the contractor's bid. And that will be on the street with that in just about a week. So that'll be out to bid in about a week, and in about a month we'll come back with the bid results for construction.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, we do have a contingency of about an identified contingency of $300,000.
Yeah. Okay.
Any other
comments? Not in this project, on the whole project.
Any other comments on this project? Anything for the audience? Okay. Can I get a motion?
Yeah, I would move that we approve the action as stated in the agenda report, including items 1, 2, and 3.
I'll second it.
Okay, we have a motion and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, very good. Okay, that now brings us to G, Veolia.
Alrighty. Let me go to G.
My name is Herman Garcia, the project manager with Veolia Water.
Good evening.
I'm going to be presenting the monthly operating report for January 2013, and I'll be presenting that. The MOR is ongoing from now on for hopefully a good time.
Okay.
We hope so.
Yeah.
Thank you for attending the safety dinner last night. It was fun. We had a lot of fun out there, and we look forward to many more years of safety. As you can see, we had approximately 1,250 days of safe operation through January 2013. Some items here, safety training, operator training. Something that I added was the water production in million gallons per month table right here. And this will be on here every month so you can track and see what our water production is throughout the year.
Nice.
Very good.
That's a table right there.
Here.
These are parameters for the facility for December, the discharge limits that were met in January. Okay. Collection, we flushed some more sewer lines. We didn't CC any TV, CCTV any lines in January, but we're doing it this month.
Okay.
And we inspected additional 68 manholes for a total of 132. Some of the major items. We had new UV banks that was installed in January, and it's operational, including the SCADA system. It's working very well. In the water, we cleaned out the backwash tank right here at Willow, took out sludge, disinfected, installed a 6-inch isolation valve in that tank that we have to isolate again. We can easily. Corrective maintenance. Preventive and corrective maintenance, did 142 work orders, call-outs, 11 call-outs, 71 hours in overtime for the month, and the rest just terms and wastewater that you can review.
Any questions? No. Anything for the audience?
That salinity number is just so close, but never where it's supposed to be, man. It's just like so close.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
We'll see you next month.
I didn't ask my question.
So yes,
I
very
asked,
good.
I didn't ask it.
You didn't ask it.
Give the new guy a break.
Yeah, give the new guy a break.
I was going to say, for those that don't know, that this was Furman's first.
It was.
So thank you for coming out to Furman.
Any manager's report?
Yeah, Virgil has three items for you as updates from prior conversations with the board regarding the salinity update, Will 7 status, and he brings you also annually a leak report for the prior year.
Okay, and in front of there on the screen is the, I call major to halfway minor size leaks that we had in Discovery Bay, generally where we bring a contractor out to make the repairs. The ones highlighted in yellow are major leaks. The ones highlighted in white are not major leaks, but they are leaks that we had to pay a contractor. We had to dig up somebody's yard in order to fix that. There were total for the year 2012, there were 18 major ones that we have for the year. And then outside of these, there are probably over 100 or more leaks that our guy Aaron responds to pretty much in a water meter box. There are what we call rubber washers in there at the curb stop. They go bad, we have to replace them. And so Aaron pretty much does that. And occasionally he'll do some other leaks for us, but generally these type of leaks I hire out to a contractor to take care of them. So I wanted to bring that up to you. Do you have any questions about this? Okay.
Is there any trending with that, Virgil? In other words, or do you think, are we seeing aging to be an issue, or is it just
some of it is, some of the streets you'll see that are familiar, and it's the type of piping that are in the ground. I won't say it's aging. I think it's premature failure on some of the materials. I have seen a few other cities or districts file lawsuits, especially against Shell Oil or some of the product line, and that's about it. So in my eyes, it's premature failure or poor installation of that material. In essence, a lot of these leaks where you have the service leak in the street, that is generally a pipe, not a copper pipe, nor a galvanized steel pipe. It's a poly pipe, and it's going up at an angle, then coming back down, going either across the street to the home, and then coming up to the water meter box. Going up at an angle, inside the poly, you have to put a stiffener in there, called the stainless steel stiffener in there. Right at that tip is where it bends, and it creases, and it starts to work wear, and then break loose there, and then all of a sudden, you've got water bubbling out of the street.
Okay.
That's 99% of them do. Occasionally, we have what we call a curb stop. That's in the AC pipe, asbestos concrete pipe. They just drilled the hole, plugged it in there, and then occasionally, some earth might move a little bit, and it pops out. And then, so today's standard is what they call a saddle. Put a brass saddle around the pipe, and it has a connection to it, so it does not pop out. Okay.
Which is how we're repairing.
We repair pretty much most of the time. If we see a, most of these are on AC pipe, and then or AC mains. And if we do have to dig to the main, then if we see a punch in, we pull that and put a saddle in.
Thank you.
Okay. The next item I want to talk to you, I think, is Well 7. Is that right? Okay. This is a picture of the drilling rig that's out there today. Drilling, we're in the process of drilling a monitoring well test hole. We're going 500 feet deep in this case. And we're trying to do, this is located right next to the pedestrian pathway going to the Safeway. And right near, very close to, right on actually, Newport Drive and Capstan, right in that little area. Okay. It's very tight meaning that the Department of Health has regulations that when we drill our well, we have to be 50 feet away from any other water source, meaning like a river, stream, that type of thing. And we are about 52 feet. So we are very close on that. So this is Well 7. We have put our pipes, what we call pipes in the ground. We finished drilling today, our 500 feet. We put a PVC pipe, two-inch, two of them, go down to the aquifers that we want a water sample from. We'll grab water samples. I was talking to the engineers today. we are probably going to do is grab a water sample from here, but at the same time, kind of take a snapshot view of all the other wells we have in Discovery Bay and pull water samples from them to see what the water quality is at that specific day at all the sites. So we know if we're having an issue at one but not at the other, we may have a problem there, something like that. So that's what we're planning to do. Okay, any questions about well 7?
Nope, let's hear about salinity.
What was that again?
Salinity.
Oh, salinity. Salinity.
All right, here's your salinity one. Let me make it bigger on this
one. The view.
Which one?
Go to the view menu on the top, I think, and go full screen.
Full screen, thank you. All right. This is the salinity that test we did a few months ago back.
That's correct.
And then once we got the results, we wondered why we were having a different number than Veolia was at the wastewater plant. Mm-hmm. Found out to be there are a few thousand test methods that you could use. Mm. They use EC, we use salinity. Mm. And so there's a difference in that, and the numbers show that in here. But what's really telling is that when we shut the water softeners, or we asked the people to shut their water softeners off, we did see a reduction in salinity come through our facility. Mm-hmm. Now, if you pan down to this guy, chart right there, you can see the numbers, the red with the water softeners off, and then the results that we had for this is EC, electrical connectivity, and then this is from our wells. Our wells pretty much stayed the same. Oops. And the water plants, ECs stayed the same. So what this told us is the water softeners are, we believe, is the cause of the salinity, which we kind of thought it was, but we needed to do some testing really to back up that. Our next thing that we want to do is one of our stations that we had, it's called the valve station. This is the valve station right here. The valve station numbers are relatively high. The valve station is all of Discovery Bay West and Ravenswood Homes. They're all newer homes, more energy efficient type. Some plastic plumbing, some copper plumbing. Most of them probably have water softeners. We don't know. Or we may have some other problem. And so our next step is we want to take and sample the lift stations. There are four lift stations that feed into the valve station, ultimately. Mm-hmm. We want to take samples from that salinity, see if one's higher than the other, or are they all the same. If we have a big difference, then we may have another problem that's aggravating or making the EC number go higher. So that's our next test.
When are we doing that?
Pardon me?
When are we doing that?
We'll probably do that within the next month on that. Mm-hmm. Just so you've, right now, we'll talk about it on Saturday, but our permit is up for renewal right now. Mm-hmm. And but we're trying to look and see if we can convince the regional board to use the results from salinity and not EC.
Does the EC correlate with water volume? The changes? If you're using more water, does this change at all? Okay.
Now, when you look at the well ones here, they stayed relatively the same. Here's your wells, and they all stayed flat. Before your test, during your test, had nothing to do with it. They're pumping the same.
I mean, from my point of view, it's pretty safe to assume it's the water softeners. I mean, if the idea of testing one section and having that change by shutting off, I mean, and take a rocket scientist at this point, it's pretty sure that's what it is.
We figured that. I think I mentioned it to you in the past, but we just need to have some documentation to back that up and just not assume that it did.
Yeah.
So now we have the testing. Now, what we are concerned a little bit is that valve station, I said, that number is relatively high.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be high because we're agitating the sewage, which then the COs could be raising our EC number. We're not sure. So we want to go back, take a sample from the valve station and the four lift stations that feed it, just to see if they sit lower and your valve station is higher, then we believe the cause of the EC going up might be the agitation of the sewage coming across through the force main. Because that's about a mile and a half force main, I think it is?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Any questions?
No. What are we going to do with that information? I mean, what's that? Okay, so we've confirmed what we all thought was.
I think we'll have to, once we do this other test within the month of the valve station and the four lift stations, based on those results, we'll probably have to sit down and kick the can around and see what should we do next, you know, go to the regional board. Our number, as you just saw in the other report, is high. What can we do to get that number below so we're not exceeding and getting a $3,000 fine?
I have a question. I mean, I know the next step, really, you're going to talk about how to get rid of water softeners.
That probably is a question we need to ask.
But here's my question. It would be easier to do if we said all new homes coming in wouldn't have water softeners. Mm-hmm. And would that delusion of that water coming in make our numbers come in? You know what I'm saying? With the fact that we added more homes without water softeners, would then make us pass so we don't have to go to the residents currently.
Or you mandate that as water softeners need repair, they go to a different type of water
different
softener.
Different type, yeah. But it'd be easier to palatable, I think, if we could get that, if that was
and
a
we would
a
probably need
scenario.
To explore that, meaning look at some other communities sure. that have already gone down that path sure. or that buzzsaw
yeah.
and see how they deal
with it. Do you have any thoughts on that, Craig? You mind if I, you know?
Just to answer the question directly,
yeah.
it would help.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Another thing that would help here is, you see this chart right here?
Mm-hmm.
You see that all the wells had the same EC
mm-hmm.
except one well.
Yeah.
Well 5B. So just putting in well 7 and moving well 5B standby
mm-hmm.
will actually help.
We're actually going to break our numbers down as it
yeah.
is. Yeah.
You know, so if we look at the data,
mm-hmm.
we look at the water plants, Newport Water Plant puts out high EC water
mm-hmm.
because it's fed by well 5B. Adding well 7, cross-connecting and doing things to help. So, yes, do what you said.
Mm-hmm.
Big homes out front, let's try and back off the water softeners or go to a type that doesn't use salt.
Use salt, that's right.
Would help.
Mm-hmm.
But as we found here, just doing what you're already doing. Put in well 7. Hopefully the EC is
also,
better.
Yeah.
Also helps. But more directly to your question, Kevin, the regional board's mandated that we conduct studies.
Okay.
So our
all
permit
right.
is up.
Right.
And we have to show demonstration, and this is showing good faith on the town
okay.
that you've been actually addressing the problem.
Yeah.
We're not receiving fines at this point, though.
No.
Okay. They're just requiring us to study it. That's the requirement.
And the other question I would have for you, Greg, is that we recently switched the primary well at Newport from 5B to 4 and put 5B, you know, we pull more water out of 4 than we it used to be the other way around, correct?
During the winter months, we rarely run well 5 now because
mm-hmm.
during the winter months, our demand is
lower.
So we just run one plant or
other. But we kind of flopped those, didn't we?
We used to
use 5B, and then when we realized we were having that issue,
we did, and
we couldn't identify it.
5B has been probably off for a good 2 months.
Was there a change in the EC at
Newport? We haven't
report?
Studied
well,
it.
In at least
in theory, right
in
there,
May,
I was going to say it's
when we did
better.
A test,
yeah.
you see well 4
yeah.
had your best water of all the wells.
Yeah.
And well 5B had the worst water. So switching
right.
helps. You
yeah.
know, and so when we report to
oh,
the
we just don't have a report out yet on it because
yeah.
it's too recent. Okay.
Right. So when we report to the regional board, we're gonna say, hey, we are doing something. We're identifying
sure.
a problem well.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And we're switching wells. You
yes.
know, and so that shows
effort
on the town's part to comply
right.
with the
right.
permit.
So that number might start running 2,095 instead of 2,105.
Could, yeah. Honestly, you know, I mean it's true. We'll have to track it helps because that 5B was a big well for you guys. You do a lot of water out 5B.
Have we
know?
Identified which kind of softeners don't that would work that don't use salt?
There are a few of them out there that
mm-hmm.
Do not use salt and that may work.
Could we pass a ordinance
some?
that
I would have to, I can't answer that yes or no. Mm-hmm. I'd have to do some
research.
I
know we said they can use copper pipes. They have to use PVC.
There's a law, I believe, on the California books that you, as a district, can ban water softeners.
Okay.
I believe it's been contested.
Okay.
I just don't know the results of that contested. Right.
Because I think that's something we can do pretty quick, and that really show that we're moving
forward. Well, right. And, of course, the real reason we wanted the data, so the board had real information.
Sure.
Not just assuming there'll be a benefit, but what is the real benefit going to be when we track, you know, if you make a move like that?
Good.
All right. Good. Thank you.
Thank you. Great, Virgil. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions for the board?
Not for me.
Anything for the audience? Okay. We'll move on to back to general manager again.
Thank you. I have three items for you this evening.
Not too many.
That you are all going to be very interested in.
All right.
I attended a meeting today that was hosted by Supervisor Pipa's office, and it had the Department of Boating Waterways was present at that meeting. Lucia Becerra, who's been a real advocate of Discovery Bay for the past couple of years as it comes to the water weed issues. She is retiring on February 28th, and we're going to be losing a strong advocate next week. However, they have been getting their permits on an annual basis from the feds. It has to do with fish and game and fish and wildlife regulations. And every time there's another species added to it, it requires another permit renewal. Mm-hmm. They have finally gotten, they don't believe there's any red flags out there. All the federal agencies and the state agencies to all be on the same page so we can get a 5-year permit to apply pesticides to control the weeds.
Oh, great.
Awesome.
Funding for 13-14 is in place.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly up to the governor and the may revise what he's going to do with it. I asked her after the meeting if she thought that it would be in jeopardy, and she did not believe that would be the case at all. So that is good news. And she did mention that that a year from the last application, or from the first application, would be this coming March, next month. And so we should see the true benefits of last summer's applications. They did get to Hyacinth this year, albeit they got there late. This year they will get there on time and hopefully have better results.
Are they talking about any form of harvesting? Because that hyacinth doesn't go away, it just dies, and it's just brown stuff that's
they actually discussed harvesting, and there was another mats, using some form of mats. I didn't understand what the mats were, but they could be for the Egeria densa.
Yes.
Okay. They've been mapping all of our bays here in the State Department, or the Department of Boating Waterways. They've been sonar mapping our bays, and so they now know when that mapping process is complete, which bays need attention the most moving into the future. So that will be happening, and that will be finishing up here in the future. And the next little creature that's on our hit list is the South American sponge plant. And it has not been seen in these parts until it was just found at Sugar Barge. So it is down here, and we can hopefully keep it at bay. That's that on the water weeds. I'd also like to report, the board is aware of this, that the lawsuit with Southwest Water has been settled. We are very happy with the results of that. We were reimbursed the full amount of the fine with a settlement. That settlement is currently being finalized, and we should be made relatively whole here in the near future. So we're very pleased with the results of that action. The final one is, as you know, it seems like it was a long time ago, but it was just last Wednesday that we closed escrow on the community center site. And if you've been out there, you see the work that's taking place. We are closing down tomorrow at 9 a.m. till Saturday morning at 7 a.m. be reopening. And we will be doing a good thorough cleaning. There have been a lot of contractors on site, electricians, our staff. We're doing everything we can, and we've been receiving extremely positive feedback from our new customers. So that's all I have this evening, unless you have any questions.
Yeah. Rick, what's the time frame for the lights going in over there on the parking lot?
They will be working on the lights, I believe, starting tomorrow. Some of them, some of them we think are just burned out bulbs, but we need to verify that.
On a similar but unrelated light issue, how long are the lights staying on down at the entrance to Discovery Bay? We were told all that everything would come down by January 31st.
What we've done the past couple of years is we've taken the holiday decorations down right after the holidays, but we left the lights up as a welcome people home when they're coming home and start.
Do we have floodlights
through the? We've been doing it through the time change. When the time change happens,
why do we have one tree with a light on it?
That's a test light that we put up.
How long do we have to test? It looks stupid.
It's a light that was put up because it's an LED light, and instead of having the bulbs at the bottom of the tree, they are up higher in the tree, so they shine brighter up on the palms themselves, and they are testing different wattages of lights to see which works best, whether they be different wattages of lights, whether they be floodlights, whether they be focus lights, that sort of thing. So they are changing them occasionally testing them out. So it is a test. It's a test palm.
How long will it be tested?
I will find out for you tomorrow.
Okay, I didn't realize that we left those lights on that for that long period of time. If there's a beautiful warm lights that light up our wall out there with a different color light than the white lights, and I thought that they were all coming down, so I guess I missed that last year. I'm not a fan of them.
Okay. Legal, anything?
Nothing, sir.
Okay, thank you. District updates? Said we're going to approve minutes. Well, approved minutes are in, we have them here in our packet. And community center report, no written report. Is there anything verbal?
We're meeting Monday.
Yeah, we have a meeting Monday. We haven't met since the last board meeting.
What happened?
We haven't met since the last board meeting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Fine.
Hey, you know.
Let's move on.
We're going to item L. Any discussion on any of the correspondence?
No.
Hearing none. Public requests, none. Any future agenda items? What do you do next?
Monday.
Okay, we are going to adjourn. Thank you for attending.